Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Why do you keep winding up with the same relationship. How's it going, Lady T? How are you?
I'm blessed this evening. How are you?
I'm good. It started off a little different.
It was a different kind of day out here in Hollywood. It started off a little cloudy. I thought it might rain, and then it cleared up, and, you know, the sun came out. So, you know, I'm definitely blessed, and I'm blessed to be here tonight in the Glass House. You know, it's good to be able to just share our feelings and, you know, be able to let down our guard at the end of the day and be able to just walk into, you know, a home where everything is laid back, kicked back, have a glass of wine or have that cigar you've been waiting on all day. You know, we want to leave here tonight, you know, just energized with a bunch of great feelings and, you know, and everything is here at the Glass House. So, you know, back to you, my suave, debonair, Simi Braxton,
all right,
co-host of the evening.
Yeah, we want to thank everyone for showing up. I see we have callers already. Thank you for,
I see you.
Yeah, so we're going to get right down to the meat of this. Why do you keep winding up with the same relationship? I'm one of those type of guys that have, in the past, I've done the same thing. You know,
mm-hmm.
and if we were asked an expert to craft a personal detailing or prototype or even an ad for that matter, it would sound something like this. Seeking someone who is kind and patient, independent yet loving, laid back yet energetic. Someone who is confident but isn't afraid to laugh at him or herself. Someone attractive but down to earth. Someone who's up for anything but knows what he or she wants. But most of the time, we wind up finding a partner that can look very different. And this might look a little bit something like seeking someone who is moody, unpredictable, aloof, yet jealous, low energy, yet temperamental, someone who has low self-esteem and no sense of humor when it comes to his or her flaws, someone who concentrates too much on his or her appearance and often feels insecure. Someone who likes to control the situation and change his or her mind about goals for themselves and their relationship. Now, when it comes to how we behave in our relationships, a person can rarely be reduced to the black and white character outline of like a newspaper ad or a prototype. There is none, because every human being has strengths and weaknesses. And all of the traits, the good, the bad, the ugly, the in-between, they're at some point they are bound to surface in the emotionally invested space that's called that intimacy of the relationship. Now, every individual is diverse and complex, and they carry with them a unique set of baggage from their past that impacts and informs their close relationships, things that have happened in our past. They are made up, or they create the makeup of who we are. Now, given this complexity, one is often left to wonder, why in the world do I keep changing or choosing the same partner? Why?
Mm-hmm.
How many new criteria I mentally create? Why do I keep winding up with a slightly varied version of the same not so blah, blah, regular bag of chips?
Right.
And, Lady T, when you actually look at it, the answer for every person is to just look at themselves. Look at ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
The experience that we had in the past is what makes us. And it also influences who we are, who we look for in a partner. Now, while most of us claim to be looking for love, true love, and I'm going to get back to that. We're going to go into that love thing today. The real compatibility and no drama, there are often, you know, unconscious influences. What, you know, is thoughts and behaviors that lead us just to exactly what we really don't want. There are the things that we subconsciously think about, you know, with the intentions of truly acquiring real love. And so one influential factor is that many of us, we seek partners who help us stay in our comfort zone, even if that zone is not all that desirable. We tend to seek people or seek out people that will allow us to be comfortable in discomfort. And that's because it's familiar.
Mm-hmm.
We seek the things that are familiar to us. Now, if our past were filled with feelings of rejection or inadequacy, we're likely to seek the same scenario in which we feel the same way as adults. And oftentimes we look for partners who reinforce the existing views we have of ourselves. For example, if we have a parent who is not always emotionally available to us or who is consistent in offering us warmth and affection, we may think of ourselves as unlovable on some level. When we look for a partner, we may be initially drawn to someone whose attention makes us feel good about ourselves. And eventually we may even start to notice that this person is, resistant to getting close, afraid of affection, afraid of, being close. So even as we are, tormented and frustrated by these feelings of rejection, we often fail to realize that the very reason we are so drawn to these type of people, it may be because we sense or we feel that they support all the familiar feelings of being inadequate and undeserving. We seek those things that we are familiar with, and we're not willing to go outside of our comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we find ourselves on the other side of this scenario, feeling trapped or clung to by our partner, we may want to consider how much we intrude or how much we were intruded on as children. Did we have a parent or a caretaker who was overbearing and imposed on us for attention or reassurance? Are we now reacting? Or are we, overreacting to our partner because he or she is looking to us for those same similar qualities that we grew up experiencing? And while we aim for partners who complement us in a positive way, we often wind up finding ourselves with people whose opposing traits can arouse negative dynamics between us. For example, how many couples do we know where one person they do the talking and then the other one stays quiet while one person tells the story and attracts the attention and the other acts as a listener and falls into the background? These characteristics, and this is the thing about this whole thing, and we're going to be on this, T, for a minute because I think that it's something that's going to be good for us, T.
The opposites attract thing.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those things where we have to really search ourselves and look at who
we are
as individuals.
Right.
And as I always tell the listeners, that it's not just about the relationship between a man and a woman or whatever your insignificant person is. It's about relationships to people every day. Although we focus on relationships, it really helps us in every relationship.
Right.
I can relate so much to doing the same thing over and over again. I had a really good friend. He attracted crazy women. And I don't know if you've ever experienced this, Lady T, but some people, they, no matter how hard they try, they attract a nutcase. Some people call them stalkers. Some people call them, you know, people that are, you know, jealous or whatever. But why is it that we continue to attract those same people? And I wanted to start off really about, you know, you remember in the past we were talking about love languages. You know?
Right, right.
And how everybody has the different, you know, languages of love.
Yeah.
How, you know, you were taught love differently from me.
Right.
Because, number one, we were raised in different households, and we had different lives.
Right.
And so I want to focus on love, L-O-V-E, love, to love. Now, the dictionary offers two separate definitions for the word love. One is of a noun, a verb. The dictionary has unwittingly pinpointed the problem that many of us have with love. Often we treat it as if it were only a noun, you know, an entity or a quality or a state or action or a concept. We forget about love being a verb. And what is a verb? It's an action,
mm-hmm.
an act, occurrence, or mode of being or a way of being. Love, it is an act, an occurrence, or mode of being, a way of being. And you'll find that the act of love is way more gratifying for both the lover and the beloved than the state of being in love. I used to have a hard time trying to understand what being in love was. Being in love is the act of love. It is the occurrence or mode of the being of love. And I'm see, the state of being in love is passive. When somebody says, I'm in love, because
mm-hmm.
they can easily slip away from the reality of what love truly is and turn it into a fantasy about being in love. See, the act of love involves real behaviors that keep a person actively engaged in loving.
Right.
That's what happens. And, you know, people, you have to learn to love. People are taught manners, you know, and how to be polite to one another. But people are not taught about being in love. You know, or how to be in love with one another. And so that right there, you know, lets me know that we can learn how to love. It's as easy as learning manners. And learning to love involves three steps. Number one, you got to acknowledge and accept.
Mm-hmm.
Acknowledge and accept. And I see you callers. I see you all. We're going to get to you right away. Everybody's they starting right off. number one is acknowledge and accept. And that's good. Thank you for your support. Acknowledge and accept. The first step to acknowledging and accepting what is given to you by your partner. Now, this step is much more difficult than it sounds because most people have little awareness of what is given to them. They perceive their partners in terms of what they want from them or what they should be getting from them instead of what is being given to them. And in order for you to gain some type of perspective, you got to step back from your partner, okay? And I've always said this. When you come into a relationship And I hate when people use this expression, T. You know, you make my life complete. No.
Oh, you don't like that? Isn't it sappy cute?
No. No. you know, if it wasn't for you, you know, I wouldn't be. I think it takes away from the individual. I know it takes away from the individual. Let me get back to what I was. See, you have to step back from your partner, and you have to look at them, you know, and you. Right now, you stand alone. Now, get a feeling for yourself as, as a separate, independent person who is perfectly capable of functioning on your own. You got this. You know, you can do, you've been doing it on your own. You are you alone. Now, take a look at your partner and look at your partner separate from you. Look at your partner separate from anything that you may expect. Look at your partner separate from anything that you want or demand of him or her, separate from a role that he or she may be trying to fill in relation to you, separate from, you know, he or she, just him or her alone. Now, once you are experiencing yourself and your partner from this point of view, this vantage point, as two separate individual people, look at your part. Look at what your partner is giving to you, and don't look at the grandiose gestures of love and devotion, the big, you know, the flowers and, you know, I mean, that's nice. Don't get me wrong. The rings, the jewelry, the clothes. No. Don't look at that. Don't look at that. Don't look for what he or she ought to be doing for you. Look for the real, simple, everyday acts of thoughtfulness, sensitivity, and kindness. Look for the unique giving that are an expression of his or her nature and his or her sensitivity. Look for, you know, the small things. When you, you know, if you may be in the other room and you may be coughing and, you know, unexpectedly you get some water or you're offered some tea. And a lot of times couples hurt each other by overlooking these seemingly small acts of love. They overlook the forest for the trees. Now, however, when you acknowledge them, you're accepting the love of your partner, the love your partner is offering you. So you have to acknowledge it and then accept it because that's what they're giving to you. Make sure you know what they're giving to you and accept it. Now, check this out. Number two, be grateful. And not only be grateful, but express your appreciation for what your partner has given to you. Now, once you have acknowledged what's being given to you and have been accepted it, the next step is to be grateful and express the gratitude to your partner. And your gratitude, it would not be conveyed with occasional, extravagant, effusive expressions of thanks and appreciation. Your gratitude would manifest itself in tender feelings of thankfulness that you would feel and express it every time kindness and sensitivity and generosity is extended to you by your partner. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. It's a little thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then as a result of this ongoing expression of appreciation, guess what? You're going to find yourself living in a constant state of gratitude for your partner's love. You will find yourself being happy for, you know, the small things. And you will, and it's just, it's a give-give. It just gives-give. It's playing catch.
Right.
Number three.
True.
Number three, reciprocate with action. Now, you've accepted and expressed gratitude for what your partner has given you. And now the final step, you give to your partner. And giving to your partner is not about you as a couple.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about how you see him or her in relation to you and your relationship. Giving to your partner involves an awareness of you as a separate person
Mm-hmm.
And as a distinctive person with your own individual traits, your own individual interests, your own individual desires, this awareness makes you sensitive to what your partner personally wants and needs. You become aware of your significant other. You know they don't even have to say anything to you, and you will become aware. You will know what's up.
Yeah, it opens up.
You don't
up.
Have to get.
Right.
Number one, you spend enough time there.
Mm-hmm.
So you become, you literally know more about yourself. This awareness, it allows you to actually know. You know, your sensitivity, your awareness of your partner, you know, it will allow you to fulfill their needs. And at the same time, it makes you conscious of what you personally have to offer. In other words, you know what to give. You become aware of what it is that you need to give your partner.
Mm-hmm.
Because of your awareness, because of you being able, that's how you reciprocate, you know, being grateful. That's how you reciprocate expressing appreciation. You reciprocate by being aware.
Aware. Mm-hmm.
And so, therefore, the final step of being loving is the act of responding to your partner's personal needs with a response that is highly individual and unique to you. I've always said this, can't nobody be you being you. And see, what you find in this is that your life will be enriched. Your life will be more joyful. You will find more satisfaction that comes from expressing your gratitude and love through simple acts of thoughtfulness and kindness. The getting is in the giving. We have, I think, Mr. D.L.W., is that you? I'm going to take you on. Hey, how you doing?
Hey, what's going on, Simi? What's going on, Lady T? How's everybody tonight?
Hey, good.
Great. I'm just listening in, brother. Just listening in.
Oh, okay.
Listening to you drop that knowledge, man. And, you know, I agree
you.
With
I really
everything
appreciate
you're saying. Oh, yeah, no
I
problem.
Really, thank you very much.
Absolutely. I agree with everything.
Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I was just saying I agree with what you're saying. And, you know, so you had mentioned something about the phrases of I'm nothing without you or you complete me or that type of thing. And, you know, I do feel it's very important that people continue to have their self, their own identity within a relationship. But I also feel that, you know, when you have that soulmate, they definitely give you a lot of completion in who you are, because sometimes you don't know who you are completely until you have that other person who's that close to you help you find out different things about yourself that you may sometimes didn't know. And especially when you've been with a person for so long, you know, they get to know you just as well as you know yourself, and sometimes even better.
Very true.
I think it's important that we, you know, make sure that we look at that as something that helps that person to become a complete person. You know, during the time I was married to the same woman for almost 20 years, with her for 24 years, and we got to a point to where, you know, halfway through our marriage, we were able to pretty much know what each other was thinking, be able to finish each other's sentences and things of that nature. And you have such a spiritual connection at that point that is extremely, it's just overwhelming. It's something that makes you say, wow, you know,
right.
And
mm-hmm.
it's just hard to explain. And, you know, when you have that, you definitely have something special. And people, I think it's important for them to recognize that when they have it and cherish it.
Right. That's true. That's true.
Very true.
I appreciate that, Mr. DLW. And, by the way, to all my listeners, the Mr. DLW has a show right before ours come on, right before the Glass House. It's called the Love and Happiness, Love and Happiness. So tune in, you know, if you can, at whenever you can. He has a great show. He does a wonderful job, and it's a great prelude to what's coming up after. And he really does a wonderful job. So I ask you all to tune in. Thank you so much, brother. I appreciate you showing up, and I thank you for your support.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So my thing is, what I really wanted to know, T, is why is it so difficult for us as individuals, as human beings, to recognize what's being given to us or what's being offered? I am guilty. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it so difficult for us to see, and not only see, but actually appreciate what we're being offered? And I know everybody don't have somebody like that, okay?
Mm,
let's just say
somebody like what?
Well, that's a whole lot of them. There's more single people out there than there are people that are together with someone.
Right.
So if you're out there, caller, and press the 1 if you want to, call in, and I'll open up your mic. But I want to know what it is that, why aren't we seeing, you know, what we need to see when we're being offered love? We've been on this for a while. Some people are resistant to getting close.
Right.
We're afraid of.
Right.
We have a fear of intimacy, and it's subconscious. The fear of intimacy is a subconscious thing. It's the fear of closeness that it affects people's personal relationship. You know, it blocks us from getting closer to the person that we want to be close to. Another thing is, you know, we resist that. And as we resist it, people, when you spend time with a person, they know that you're not getting close. They know that you're backing away.
Mm-hmm. They can feel it.
They can feel it.
Yeah,
and when you
find
yourself in this scenario, what is it that you do?
Mm-hmm.
There was an article where this married man, he told a story, and he said that his wife, had mutually, she was one of those that would always want to, she mutually acknowledged that in the course of their relationship, she was the one that personally, she called the shots, in a sense. During the course of the relationship, he had become, passive, and she had become very controlling. He had become very passive, and she had become very controlling. And he refused to make any decisions, and she insisted on making all decisions. And so they took time out, and they decided that for a week he would make every decision and that she would go along with it. And the very first night they got into the car to go out to dinner, as soon as they you know, got to the driveway, the husband hits the brake, and the car came to a halt. And he found himself literally paralyzed as he waited for his wife to tell him which way to go. Okay.
Okay, that's funny.
You know, a lot of times, you know, they can tell you, you know, what to do so much, especially
right.
when I get in a car. I got a thing about the car. Why is it that you have to tell me every turn, car on the left, watch out, slow down, going too fast, slow up, turn there, ooh, you almost hit that. And I've gotten to the place where I said, okay, I find myself doing what I'm being told a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes frustrating. It really does. Instances like these, they can become a larger problem for couples.
Right.
And a lot of times we choose people who fill out our personalities.
Right.
And then we want to resent them for the very traits that make them our other half, you know. The wife, you know, that we were talking about, you know, and her husband, her for being, you know, overbearing and ruling, and the husband for being weak.
Right.
You know?
He got stuck on stupid.
Right. You know, but yet she refused to give up the control. Her husband felt victimized by her, you know, demanding pattern.
Right.
But then he also refused to voice his opinion. So he had a responsibility. And I have a responsibility. You know, I mean, and a lot of times we do pick, you know, those, the people in our lives, they're stronger in certain areas or better in certain areas than we are. And we shouldn't feel slighted for having people around us, not only in our personal relationship, but we shouldn't feel slighted by people who are better than us at certain things. It's okay
mm-hmm.
to not be that good at everything and have someone or someone's people that are, you know, better than you at what you are not good at, because it strengthens us. You see, it increases us. That's
right.
When we as couples in relationships, or people that are in relationships, period, should appreciate those that can help encourage us to become better. And I think a lot of times where we mess up and where we go wrong is we need to be encouraging to one another. Encouragement is a very powerful tool in any relationship. Competition is not what relationships are about. Competition does not strengthen relationships, but encouragement does.
Right.
And so after a while, from being with an individual, we learn to know a lot about them. So it's important that we allow ourselves to be a source of encouragement to people. So even when we choose partners who, complement us positively, we run a risk of eventually distorting them or provoking them to become somebody just called me. I'm sorry. When they know I'm on the radio tonight, we have a tendency to provoke or distort the relationship, you know, to become, you know, when we are less compatible with them. See, this is often not the case when we get in, when we first get involved with someone in the beginning of the relationship. Okay, so now this is where I'm at. See, what happens is in the beginning of a relationship, we are we're out of our comfort zone. We naturally step out of our comfort zone. We literally force ourselves outside of our own heads. There's a certain freedom when we first meet someone. There's a certain there's a risk that we take. We force ourselves outside of our heads into an interaction with someone that's unfamiliar. The scenario of getting to know a stranger forces us to push ourselves, to be our best selves, to treat others, the other person with respect and be interested in that person. And that's why a lot of times at the beginning of relationships, they stay alive. They stay alive. They stay fresh because there's a certain amount of respect that's there. There's a certain amount of interest that's established, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There is a certain amount of excitement that's there because we're not in our comfort zone.
Right.
And comfort can sometimes bring about stagnation. Comfort is just like, it's you know, it should always be moving. Things should always be moving. It doesn't have to always move fast, but it should flow. You know, stagnant water, it stinks. It builds up mold and mosquitoes. And flowing water is where things grow and fish, you know, fish and, you know, you can drink it and things of that nature. The relationship has to flow. And you have, in order for your relationship to continue flowing, you have to get out of your comfort zone. Or, you know, don't get so comfortable to where, I'm cool. Nah, that's okay. But you didn't start out like that.
Right.
That wasn't where you started.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, you know, you think that now that you've got her, him, or them, or whatever, that now you can just chill. See, as we get closer, our defenses, they start to rise. Yeah, as we get closer. Because we start to feel more vulnerable. And influences from our past, they start to seep in. And we've got to be vigilant of this stage. We have to be wary of this stage, of how we can distort our partners. We may start to insert hidden meanings into their words that suit a way we feel about ourselves. Been there, done that. We may start to project qualities onto them or exaggerate characteristics that they possess. You see, the husband doesn't want to commit to, you know, going away for the weekend. It's not that he doesn't want to, you know, commit to you. He might just, you know, like to do things that are spontaneous.
Hmm.
I want to read this story to you. This husband, he wouldn't commit to his wife when he was going away for the weekend. He thought that it would be nice to just have time, you know, at home alone with her. And she instantly interpreted his resistance as rejection. Okay, and then what she came to realize in the course of the conversation was that while her husband he did have trouble committing to certain plans, he had every intention and desire to spend the weekend with her. You know, a reality that, you know, clearly contradicted her assumption that he was just rejecting her. In addition to distorting our partners, we sometimes provoke them into giving us a certain response. you can provoke your partner into giving you a certain response. It might not be that they don't want to go out or have fun or be with you. They just might want to chill.
True.
It doesn't mean they don't want to be seen with you. But then at some time, it can be flipped in such a way that after a while, the same lady, she didn't even care at all about going out. It was something that was compelling her to push her husband anyway by bringing the topic that would distance him from her, by nagging at her husband.
Mm.
A lot of things he wasn't concerned about. You know, she would always insist on talking about travel plans, home renovations, and financial matters well in advance, you know, when it was necessary. But this nagging, not only was she preventing a more personal and meaningful interaction between them, but she was provoking him to lose interest in activities that, you know, which she thought were critical in the relationship. So a lot of times, just because the individual, your significant other, does not want or desire to go out or do some of the things that you want them to do, you have to figure out a way to make that happen. Remember what we talked about the last time? Allow your needs, desires, to become requests, demands.
Right.
Because a request is a lot more receivable.
Right.
A demand is you better.
Right.
Or you ought to. Or you should be.
Right.
And my question is, why is it you better? Or you ought to? Or you should? Everything is not like that, especially when you're talking to your significant other. It's just
true.
A little twist of, and sometimes you have to take your time and just, you know, even if you're frustrated, don't be. Allow yourself, all about the delivery. It's how you say things to people, and allow it to be heartfelt. Because we always got to be aware of how we select. See, it can provoke and distort our partners to, you know, fill the role that recreate our past. A lot of times we are connected to the things that we have lived in our past. And that's why, as I said before, you must understand who you are as an individual first. And the better that we understand ourselves, the better we are be able to choose our partners, the partners who will support us just as we support them as a unique, complex, independent individuals that we are. We are all unique, complex, unique individuals. Back to our past is really a difficult thing for a lot of us. It's hard to look at what you've been through in your life.
Right.
It's difficult to see what, you know, because relationships, they can be damaging to your heart, damaging to your mind, damaging
right.
to your self-esteem. You know, you may have been raised by parents that fought all the time. A mother that stayed out in the street. A father that was always around but never did anything. A mother who was probably abusive and a father that just sat there. Yeah, he went to work. He brought the money home. But he never said anything. And he never once told you that he loved you. And better yet, didn't show it either. The past is something that we must embrace. The past, our individual past, is something that we have to take a good look at and allow it to be exactly what it was, and find a way for our past to be a source of strength, power, because it wasn't about you that it happened to you. It wasn't about you because of those things that it happened. Yeah, it happened to you, but it wasn't all about you. Those things that happened to you, that you went through, was for somebody out there that's looking at your life right now to gain a source of strength and encouragement. It might be the person that you run into that you love, that you say that you want to be with the rest of your life. And just by you showing that act of love, is a way of being. As I've said this before, we are human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And we are being kind, being receptive, being forgiving, being creative, being resourceful, being love.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times people always want what they're not willing to be. They have all these demands. They have all of these lines of demarcations. They've written it down on a paper. But they're just not willing to be that, what they desire in their life. And a lot of that has to do with what has happened in your past. And there are layers, and they build up. They just build up. One relationship after another. Same thing. Same individual. Why are, and then they come up with, all men are the same. All women are the same. What about you, me? What is it that I'm doing that I need to discontinue? Or what is it that I need to start? These feelings of inadequacy, these feelings of rejection. Why? Why do I feel this? Why do I always go for the guy that wants to slap me? Why do I always go for the girl that wants to stay out in the streets? Why do I pick the whore? Why? What does that have to do with? What is it that I'm doing? What is it that I'm not doing? I'm a good person.
Right.
I treat people right.
Right.
What we have to do is we have to peel the layers off. Self-esteem. Some people can seem like they have the greatest self-esteem. Is your self-esteem low? It's just like stress, putting ourselves down. It's just one of those commonly accepted psychological conditions we just seem to tolerate without putting up too much of a fight. And then there's this critical inner voice describes the self-shaming thoughts we experience and the ways that they attack us in various areas of our lives, the negative thoughts that we allow to, seep into our brain. As a man thinketh, so is he. These thoughts and these feelings, they are generated by our critical inner voice, that me, myself, and I, these thoughts are formed, from our early life experiences. These thoughts they stick with us. They stay with us throughout our adulthood, and they grow even louder when we are going after important goals. Why is it that when I'm almost there at this point, I back up and I quit and I stop and I don't go any further? Why don't I just cross the finish line? Inner voice. It's something that we're telling ourselves about ourselves that just isn't true. I don't care if your mother, your father, your uncles, your cousins, I don't care who they are. They can tell you whatever they want to tell you about. You ain't going to never be this and you ain't that and you're ugly and you're black and you're fat and you're skinny and you're tall. That doesn't have to stay with you. And that's not true. Every individual that is born on this earth has a gift inside of them. And when it comes to relationships, out of everything that's going on, even though we have our faults and we have our character defaults and we have our quirks, of course we do. But when you are in a relationship, any relationship, for the jewel in everyone, look for the greatness in each and every individual that you come in contact with. Look for it. It's there. I don't care if they're in a wheelchair, you have a brain damage. Somebody, you can go into the hospital and see a person laying there incapacitated. There's greatness in them simply because of the fact that they're still alive. And it's something that you can learn from that individual right there in that hospital on that bed. It's something that can spark you. Never, ever take the greatness of another individual for granted. Because it's there. And so many times, we overlook the jewel that's right in front of us. We overlook the opportunity to be with such a wonderful human being because of the opinions of others. We overlook what's right there that we can hold on to simply because of the fact that we don't see it and we're not trying to look for it. And it ain't about everybody and what we look like. That's not your validation. A ring on your finger is not a validation about your relationship. You know, how many clothes that he or she has bought for you, gifts, it's not a validation. It's the times when no one is around. And why is it that every time I get something, I have something, I allow this crazy conversation to go in my head, go on in my head, and tell me all of these things, and I destroy it? Low self-esteem. It's our inner critic. And that inner critic, it wreaks havoc in our lives. It wreaks havoc on our self-esteem. It discourages us from becoming the people we want to be and living the lives that we seek to live. Inner voice. It's that me, myself, and I. And we have to identify it. Because you are love. I am love. You are peace. I am peace. We just have to find it. And the media, television, radio, at work, our daily lives, the things we do on a regular basis, people don't come with their true selves. The majority of the time, they all have masks on. A mask for work, a mask for home, a mask for church, a mask, you know, mask, different. They say take off this hat to put on that hat. What's wrong with allowing your true self, who you really are, to shine? What's wrong with that? It's okay to be you. Nobody can beat you being you. Nobody. And once you understand that you are everything that you need to be and that you lack nothing and that you have all that you need as you are, as the person that you are, as the human being that you are. See, because you have to tap into yourself and you have to get past all the ugly stuff that happened in your past. Because all of us got some ugly in us. All of us have experienced some of that. But that doesn't mean that's who you are. That doesn't mean that you have to stay in, you know, just because you went through something, that doesn't mean that you have to stay there. You know? You don't. You don't have to stay there. And you don't have to let nobody tell you or define who you are as a human being that's loving, kind, generous, creative, and forgiving. We're going to take a break right now with a song I think that you'll like. We'll be right back. And thank you for joining us in the Glass House.
Just to be close to you, girl. Just for a moment, well, just for an hour, just to be close.